Welcome to Red Alert Radio, grassroots radio with an ear on the issues that matter to you. Hosted by your local Labour MPs.
Kia ora, my name is Julie Ferry and I'm the Deputy Chair of the Puke Tapapa Local Board, one of five Roskill Community Voice reps on that board of Auckland Council and part of the City Vision Centre-Left whānau. I have a monthly spot on Red Alert Radio, although you've been hearing from me a bit more often recently during the pre-election period. I'm very keen to get your feedback and you can find me easily on social media, both Twitter and Facebook. Just search for Julie Ferry. It's a bit of a funny spelling, F for Fred, A-I-R-E-Y. We also now have a Red Alert Radio Facebook page and you can search Red Alert Radio AKL and it should pop up. We'll be putting up links to the podcasts once they're up online, as well as other bits of useful news relevant to our interests, links to the organisations we've talked to, photos, that kind of stuff. You can also get all of our past shows on the Red Alert Radio archive on planetaudio.org.nz. And today I'm talking with Jackie Clark, who's a good friend of mine. But for today, she is the head auntie of The Aunties, a charitable trust, which I should also disclose I'm on the board for. Now, The Aunties website states, The Aunties provide sustained support to a refuge in Auckland and also help bring joy and dignity to the lives of vulnerable people. And Jackie, in the organisation, is the one who does the do to make that actually happen. And it's great to have her with us to talk about this very important work today. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, my darling.
Now, first up, a little bit of Aunties 101. What do you do?
I've been asked that so many times and I really have to get it pinned down at some stage. I meet people who need stuff. They could be organisations. I have people referred to me from the community. Sometimes it's women from the refuge. There are several refuges. It still says a refuge, but there's actually now several refuges that we look after. And I get the basic thing is that I get them what they need. But that can be quite involved. Yeah. And I tend to do a lot of advocacy around refuges in general, around domestic violence. I am also kind of, when I talk about being an auntie, that's kind of a job description in itself.
Yeah.
So there are people in my life who have come into my life through the aunties, through the refuge usually, and I provide sustained pastoral support for them. The aunties also, we look after some of their financial needs as they go on in their journey. So I meet with organisations and meet with people and we figure out what I can do for them, what the aunties can do for them, and we do that. So there's three women's refuges, a family emergency house, the New Zealand Prostitutes Collective, and quite a number of women in the community that have been referred to me. So they've all got my phone number and they text me if they need anything. That could be anything from supermarket food cards to clothes. A number of the women who we have helped in the past are now aunties themselves. So, for example, on Saturday I'm meeting one of them down at the storage unit and she's bringing back some clothes that that she doesn't need any longer.
And so they can go on to someone else.
Absolutely. That's, you know, and the girls always say to me that they want to give back. So, yeah, that's a really good way. And there's a lot more stuff that I do, but
yeah,
I can't think of it.
It is one of those jobs that sort of doesn't have any borders to it.
No, no borders at all.
It's sort of as big as the container you put it in and sometimes it overflows the sides a bit.
Just a bit, yeah.
Yeah.
Just a bit.
Yeah. So how did you come to be doing this work, Jackie? And I say work, but you're currently doing it unpaid. And I know that you were also a kindergarten teacher for a very long time. So how did that change come about? How did this start for you?
It started at the beginning of 2013 and working as a kindergarten teacher in Māngere, and I rang up the local refuge and said, would you like these kids' clothes? that the kids had left behind at the end of term. A woman came and got them. I didn't know who she was. I thought she was a volunteer. It turns out she ran the place. She just got the job as running the place. And I just opened my mouth, as I do open my mouth quite a lot.
In very useful ways.
Not always. And said, what else do you need? And this sort of huge list of things spilled out of her mouth. And I started with just one, getting stuff on social media for one woman who was pregnant and needed some stuff. So we got her all her baby clothes and all her baby gear and all that sort of stuff. And it kind of expanded, you know. And then, my best friend died that year, same year. And I rang Chris, who was the person who ran the refuges, and I said, we need to step this up.
Yeah.
Which now I look back at it, it was a bit of a psych 101 kind of, because the grief I was in was extremely deep.
Yeah.
And so I don't know why that happened, why I decided to do that, to get more involved. And then I realised I couldn't do it by myself. I'd been getting stuff, you know, just people would drop stuff off at the kindergarten and what have you.
When you say stuff, you mean like donations?
Clothes
primarily.
Clothes, towels, bedding, yep. That kind of stuff. It was pretty ad hoc back then. I didn't have any lists. They would just tell me that they needed stuff and I'd get stuff. It's changed, of course, but and then we sort of did Christmas. So we had a meeting, about six of other women and I, just friends, at somebody's house, and I wanted to figure out how to make it more sustainable. And I came away from that meeting really, really dissatisfied with what they'd talked about, because they really wanted to know, is it a charity? And I didn't care about any of that.
Yeah.
I just knew that these were people who needed stuff and I wasn't going to be stopped from getting it for them.
Yeah.
So I didn't find that helpful. However, what that led on to was me going away from there and going, right, let's do Christmas.
Right.
And so that kind of is when things really accelerated.
And so that first Christmas was mostly about getting presents?
Presents for the kids. Yeah. I just went on Twitter and I just said, look, if you want to buy a present for a kid, you know, I'll give you their name and their age. You go and buy a present, you send it to me. It was just madness. We ended up with seven presents per child. There were, at that stage, I think there was like 35 kids or something. It was just horrendous.
But in a good way.
In a good way for them. I say to people, I don't like Christmas very much. And they look at me, they're appalled. Because the aunties do really, you know, bang up Christmases. We do a great job. But I don't enjoy it.
But like working in retail at Christmas.
Yeah. Pretty much. So I'm going to love this year a bit more because I know that we've decided to have a Christmas subcommittee, which would be fantastic. But yeah, so that's when it really accelerated and I decided to use the word aunties. I don't remember who termed it, but it was very cynically, it was to get more stuff.
Yeah.
For the woman, and it's kind of turned into something really beautiful, which I felt real bad about that I did. You know, I mean, I've got to be honest about it. It was these girls needed stuff, you know, and a really good way of getting people stuff is to, of course, engage them and appeal to their hearts, you know, pull their heartstrings sort of thing. And
yeah,
you know, and that the aunties was one of those terms that was one of those phrases that. People liked that. They liked thinking, you know, that they were aunties and involved. And I also found, and what ended up happening really was that I discovered that the more engaged the givers are to the people they're giving to, even though they might never meet them, that really works a treat. So I worked very, very hard in the first 2 years to make sure that people understood who they were giving to.
Yeah.
And I made the connections for them in all sorts of ways, from the woman's stories with their permission. I became very, very good at telling women's stories in a very general way. To, you know, when somebody got something from somebody and they were really happy or thrilled about it, passing it on via social media.
Yeah.
You know, and as you know, we had an emailing list and... Yeah, so that was a really good way of doing it. And that worked really, really well, you know.
Yeah, so when we're talking about people needing stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And you've talked about clothes and toys and presents and things. And, yep. And by the way, 7 presents for each kid. And
oh, it was abominable. It was just horrible.
Not for them.
No, but for the refuge staff, it was, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, these are kids who are, they've left their normal home.
Yep.
Where they've been living. They've mm-hmm. often been living in an environment that's been quite unhealthy for them, and
yep.
You know, particularly on an emotional,
yep.
perhaps in a physical way.
Mm-hmm.
And they might not have actually had 7 presents at one time before in their lives.
Most of them had never had one present.
Right.
A number of the children I know had never, ever had a Christmas present. And one of the women actually said to me, when I was a child, I never got any presents at all.
Yeah.
And she said, I remember getting a school bag, and that was a huge treat. And so when she saw the effort and the extent to which aunties went to make sure that children had really lovely presents,
yeah.
Yeah, it made her really, really happy for her children that they had that, yeah.
Yeah. And it takes that particular stress off.
Oh, God, yes.
Mm. Those families.
Yep.
You know, I mean, I know the stress often, particularly for the women in families around
yep.
Christmas of,
yep.
you know, everything that you have to organise
yep.
and then you have to put your game face on as well.
Yep, yep. That's
on,
right.
On the day and beforehand. And so yep. to take some of that stress away must feel pretty good.
We do birthday presents as well. And one of the things that I make sure they have is wrapping paper, and it's nothing to do with us.
Yeah.
So we buy the present or have the brand new toys that people have given to me to for that purpose, and I just give them to the women, and with wrapping paper and cards and stuff, and
yeah,
you know, so they feel that they, yeah, that's them doing that. It's not us. It's not me. It's them. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're enabling them to be able to do that for themselves.
Always.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And so, what surprised you about this work? It's evolved very organically.
Mm.
But what? Looking back now, do you think, gosh, I can't believe I overthought that, or I didn't believe it would work that way, or...?
Oh, there's a lot of that stuff. I don't really do it for the reasons people expect me to do it.
Yeah.
I don't do it because it's helping people, which sounds so weird. People just look at your gaze when you say that, and I don't. I do it for the looks of the women's faces.
Yeah.
When they figure out that people care about them. That's what it is to me. I cannot believe that I didn't realise how healing it would be for me.
Yeah.
Not just around my friend's death, because she was my everything.
Yeah.
But around the domestic violence in my own marriage.
Yeah.
Years and years and years ago. And, yeah, I didn't realise that was going to happen, you know. I didn't realise that some of the women would become friends, really good friends, you know, good, who had my back, you know.
Yeah.
There's a couple of them that I didn't go into it for that, you know.
So,
you know, I've got lots of friends. It was people who just, we get on really well together. And I'm also really surprised at how easy my manner is, or was with them when I first started, and I found my people.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm a fairly cash person, and I've got in trouble with it a lot. Normally environments that are real, that are really where Pākehātanga is strong.
Yeah.
I don't do too well in those environments, even though I come from, you know, a really well-off family, white family. That ain't my thing, you know, and I discovered that. I mean, I've never, ever worked in an environment that was white middle class, but, yeah, it was quite interesting to me that I'm sitting in a refuge in South Auckland and it felt like home, you know. And that was because of the people there who made me feel really welcome, and because, as one of the women said to me, you should have been in here.
Right.
Because that felt right to me, that what she was saying was accurate. So that was a really big surprise. I didn't expect to be healing at all in any way, shape or form. I also did not expect that I would be so good at it. And I think, really, if we're going to talk about, you know, I'm really honest about this, that this is the only thing I've ever been sustainably good at in my life.
So far?
So far, yeah. I was a really good teacher.
Yes.
I was teaching, when you're teaching, it very much is around, especially kindergartens, and when you're working a team, of course, the efficacy or your productivity is very dependent on the people you're working with.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody is an excellent anything if the people they're working with make them feel like they're not, and your performance suffers a lot, you know, depending on your colleagues. So, you know, nobody's ever sustainably good at anything. Whereas this, I've been sustainably good at it, like really good at it.
Yep.
For 5 years and counting, you know. I'm really surprised how well I've done, considering that when I brought you on board last year, so we've been aboard for a year.
Yes.
In a charity since March this year. And I've been very surprised at how okay I've been at letting go of the reins.
You've done very well.
Yeah, sometimes not so much. But you know, boards, sometimes you go, oh, my God, just let me do it.
Yeah.
You know, why are we talking about this? But I understand why, of course, I do. It's about sustainability and the long-term good health of the organisation. But, yeah, sometimes it's, when it gets frustrating, I just go, well, actually, it's not too bad. I'm with a group of friends, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why I picked you all, because you're friends and all good at what you do. So, yeah, that surprised me quite a lot. And probably the thing I've been most surprised at, really, is the generosity of people.
Yeah.
I'm just pausing because I'm getting teary about this. I, every day of my life for the last 5 years, I see the goodness and kindness and love in people.
Yeah.
And people on social media talking about, you know, I mean, just the shootings.
Yeah.
You know, all of the shit that goes on in the world, pardon my French, but all the stuff that goes on in the world, I've been warned not to swear.
Didn't work, did it, listeners?
No. All the stuff that goes on in the world that's really bad, and so what ends up happening is, as human beings, is we look at that stuff and we go, oh my God, the world is doomed, you know. And of course, because of the sort of the everywhere-ness of...
Yeah, it's inescapable.
You know, of the tragedy in the world. I mean, the world has been full of tragedy for thousands and thousands of years since it's nothing new. But what is new, and probably in the last, certainly the last 20, 25 years, I mean, I've been online 25 years, but particularly in the last, I think, 7 or 8 years, is the utter inescapability of it.
Yes.
And I feel none of that. I don't feel any of the doom and gloom, and oh my God, the world is doomed, because every single day people are doing beautiful things for other people. And sometimes I'm enabling that. Sometimes I'm just a messenger. We got a phone call on Sunday night about a car. Sunday afternoon, actually. And by Sunday night, there was a woman in South Auckland who had a car.
Who didn't have one on Sunday morning.
You know, it's a 1995 car, so it's not flash. It's in really good condition. So I did nothing except take the phone call and know who it was going to.
Make the connection.
Because that's what the relationships I have with people enables. So, yeah, sometimes it's just as simple as being that intermediary, and other times it's a bit more involved than that, but, yeah.
And so, you know, we've sort of talked about what surprised you, but what are the, and I've certainly learnt a lot through being on the board and watching what you do and how the system works, or rather doesn't work, because most of it seems to be pretty broken. What are the common misconceptions you come across?
We're about to get political, listeners. Come with me on this ride. The misconceptions are that women's refuges are run from one place in Wellington, and they're not. They're all run completely. They're all separate charity. Every single refuge is a separate charity. Often, as in with the organisations I deal with, there's a trust that might run one or two refuges. all of them need the same things. The women's, so there is the Independent Women's Refuge Collective of New Zealand, which is what people think of when they think Women's Refuge, which is an organisation based in Wellington. And there are around 90 refuges in New Zealand. I could be wrong on that figure, but it's a rough guess. Of whom 75, I think thereabouts, are affiliated with the national body. They're an extraordinarily body. They've been around for a long time. They are advocates and they campaign and lobby and they write policy and they push the government to do the right thing. And they're always fighting. So there's that misconception that everybody's, it's just a homogenous thing.
Yeah.
One thing, where in actual fact it's not. The other misconception, I think, is that domestic violence in New Zealand affects just Māori and Pacific Island women. That is completely wrong. I hear all the time, you know, and I get a bit sick of it. It's rife.
Right.
Domestic violence in New Zealand is rife. The other thing that I get, which is related to this, is that domestic violence looks like once were warriors with the extreme physical violence. It does not. You know, that's what some of it looks like. But most of it is not. Most of it's psychological and emotional. And the women often tell me that that's the worst stuff. Because you can heal from a broken arm, but you know, it takes a lifetime to heal from the emotional wounds that are inflicted.
And so what role do you think poverty plays? Because there is a conception that, you know, and you've talked about the intersection with race, Māori and Pacifica, and, you know, there is an overrepresentation in terms of poverty as well amongst Māori and Pacifica. What role do you think poverty plays? Because that's one of the things that I've been thinking about, is that there are a lot of white women who suffer domestic violence, whether it's physical or emotional abuse.
But it's not reported.
It's not reported. And they often have other options. They can go and stay with family. They might have a separate bank account. They might have their own job. No?
No, I think they often have less options because they're economically dependent. Often. On their partner.
Right. So what does that look like? You know, because I know that one of the misconceptions that I was stunned to find out about when I started supporting the work that you do is around the fact that most of the, well, the women in refuges are paying rent.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's often supported by Housing New Zealand, but not necessarily. So, you know, what does that actually look like? Because I think about the
what does the poverty look like? Do you
mean? Yeah.
I'm just inured to it. I sometimes have to say to myself, this is not normal. And it shouldn't be normal. What it looks like is that when they come to refuge, they're leaving everything behind.
Yeah.
Everything. Some of them flee in the middle of the night with nothing. Some of them come a couple of weeks afterwards. Some of them are picked up by the refuge staff and whipped out of there. Some of them come with their cars packed full to the gunwales, full of stuff. We've just had one woman arrived a couple of weeks ago and she said to me yesterday, I took them perfumes and makeup, and she said, oh my God, Jackie, I brought everything but the kitchen sink and I didn't bring any makeup. And she was just going to spend some money that she'd got her bond back from her house, and so she's going to spend $50 and buy some makeup and some treating things. And I turned up and she goes, oh my God, you couldn't have turned up a better time with this stuff.
What's that stuff that makes you feel like a human being, like a person?
Oh, you know, she said to me, that she didn't wear perfume for years because of the abuse it garnered. That he would be denigrating to her, oh, who do you think you are, and accuse her of cheating. So she just never, ever wore perfume. And then we picked up this Giorgio Armani, because this is all brand new stuff in the packet. It comes from this extraordinary auntie who's a beauty journalist, and I love her so much. Shout out to Auntie Helene. So all in the packaging, you know, there was bottles and bottles of it. And I said, the girls, let's just take one each because, you know, there's other people need it. And And we picked up this one anyway, and it said strength with you, right? And this woman turned around, she started laughing, she goes, Jesus, Jackie, strength without you, am I right? And we all started laughing, you know, this very posh perfume which had it completely and utterly wrong, and it was in completely the wrong place for this particular woman. So they pay rent, you know, and what that means is that they often don't have enough money for food.
Yeah.
Which the refuge helps them out with, I help them out with, you know. But
so there's a monthly food shop. Is that right?
No.
And food baskets sometimes at Christmas?
There's a food baskets at Christmas, which are like luxury food baskets, but really when they arrive, they get a $100 pack and save thing.
Yeah.
To make a gift card. I make sure there's $50 and $100 ones at the refuge all the time that the staff can give out if women are running short. They also get, the refuge provides this, they get meat vouchers. There's a butcher, just a cheap butcher up the road. And they get petrol. I make sure there's petrol vouchers for them so they don't have to pay for that sort of stuff, yeah.
So how do we change this, Jackie? I know we've got, like, you know, 3 minutes left. Left the biggest question till last, of course. But, I mean, what do you see as ways that we can change what is effectively a broken system, or a system that allows this to happen and then charges women rent to get away from violence and abuse? In, you know, 2.5 minutes.
The funding for refuges, as I understand it, is arcane. It's very complicated. The funding is administered by the MSD, who are, as we know, treat the government or the tax money that they have budgeted to work on like their own money, and are very sparing with it.
And so it's, you kind of have to make the case that you need some or may perhaps be eligible, as opposed to, okay, what do you need? How do we help you to get what you need?
Some refuges are fully funded, some are partially funded, some aren't funded at all. It's ridiculous. So in this particular field that I work in, refuges need to be fully funded so that they can afford to do what they need to do. If you're asking me how do we end poverty...
Well, you've only got 2 minutes left now, Jackie. So, how do you end poverty in 2 minutes? No, I'm not.
No, we're not. No, so, for me, personally, the policy around refuge funding is what the problem is in that particular sector.
Yeah.
How do you solve emotional and physical and psychological violence in New Zealand? Patriarchy and rape culture and male toxicity and all that stuff, you know. It's a long, long, long road. Long road.
Yeah.
And we're just there to put some love in people's lives and care for them and let them know they're cared for and hope, you know, that it's reparative in some way or shape or form. Meanwhile, I just love doing what I do. I would keep on doing it till the end of time if I could.
Let's see if we can help you out with that.
Yeah.
How do people support the aunties? How do they, and you've talked about getting donations of staff. I know donations of money are always welcome too.
Good.
So how does that happen?
It's really easy. You can go to www.givealittle.co.nz/cause/cupofire, CAPAWHAEA.
And I'll put that up on the Facebook page.
www.aunties.co.nz is the best place to go.
Yep. And there's a Facebook page as well?
Refuge Aunties, there is, yeah.
Great.
And get all the information right there, and my phone number's there as well, so.
Cool. And I'm not surprised that we're out of time already.
No.
Thank you so much, Jackie. And
thanks,
we might have to get you in to answer some more long, tricky, complicated questions.
I'd be very
at
happy
another
to.
Date.
Be very happy to.
Great. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. And we'd love to hear your feedback through Twitter or Facebook. A reminder, you can listen again to this interview or any of our back catalogue at planetaudio.org.nz and check out our Facebook page, Red Alert Radio AKL. This has been Julie Ferry for Red Alert Radio. Ka kite anō.
Get together with your local MP next week at 9:05 a.m. Or listen online anytime on planetaudio.org.nz/redalertradio.